Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I am a very fatigued Chris Clements.
You're fatigued.
I am fatigued.
That's what happens when you get a new puppy.
Yeah, we got a new puppy. Her name is Dolly, little King Charles.
And it's very
I took turns last night, and whoa.
It's like having a baby.
Woo! 11, 1, 3.
Oh, wow. That's pretty brutal.
It was a little brutal.
We have a great guest with us today. Lisa DePasquale
yes.
is here. DePasquale, I guess I should say, right? Lisa, thanks for being here.
Lisa, well, we can at least get her name right.
Yeah. Lisa and I have known each other for a long time. She kind of cut her teeth on, she was the head of CPAC for how many years, Lisa?
6 or 7. I went out in style, making CPAC a circus by inviting the crazy Donald Trump in 2011. And that was the final straw.
The final straw, which is so interesting when you think about it. So Lisa gets in trouble.
Crazy back then?
Yeah.
Among other things.
Yeah, there's a few things. But so Lisa gets Donald Trump to CPAC in 2011. And this was, what year, you had Rush Limbaugh there the year or two
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I had that, Rush right? in 2009. Okay. That was kind of the benefit of being CPAC director is, you know, when everybody wants to, you know, would be willing to pay money to introduce someone, it's like, no, actually, I'll introduce Rush.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
I'll save you all the trouble. Yeah, I'll take care of it. So yeah. She introduces Rush in 2009. Then she brings Trump, 2011.
Yeah.
And some of the board members didn't like that. And so
they must like it now.
That's the great irony, right?
Yeah, because
now the board members of CPAC, you know, you have to pay to make speeches at CPAC now.
Right.
Which Jim Lehman, our illustrious candidate for the United States Senate here in the great state of Arizona, apparently paid like $50,000 or something like that to CPAC or the American Conservative Union.
Yeah.
To have a speaking spot this last spring.
It didn't do much good.
No. And so I didn't realize up until that point that, you know, there was a pay to play at CPAC.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think at most conferences, you know, sponsorships get you stage time. You know, but obviously there are times when you just bring somebody in and they get paid to come because they're a big enough draw. So, Lisa, you've got a long history in the conservative movement, also very close to Ann Coulter.
Who we had on the show.
That was so much fun. That was thanks to Lisa.
Well, thank you.
It was a barrel of laughs because, as you know, Ann, she gets talking and you don't get a word in edgewise.
So breaking news.
Breaking news. And so we're going to talk about this.
Breaking news. Hate to interrupt this wonderful moment talking about Ann Coulter.
But Thursday.
This is bigger news.
September 8th, yeah. That we've just been, note has been passed on that the Queen has in fact passed away. So the Queen of England.
God save the Queen.
Yeah,
we mean it, is, man.
And Alyssa, so
That's the end of an era.
I took Reagan to school today and I came back and Alyssa's and I was it's so ironic. The Smiths were playing, Girlfriend in a Coma. And I get home and Alyssa's like, I think the Queen might have passed away. And I'm like, really? She's like, well, the family is rushing there. And so maybe she isn't yet.
And the BBC suspended all broadcasting.
Yeah.
Earlier today until 6 p.m. or whatever. They announced they would not be carrying anything.
Now, I'm on the BBC website. They haven't announced it on the website yet, so we'll just trust Robin.
Well, BBC.com Live, it says the Queen has died, Palace announces.
Oh, okay. Well, so, Lisa, you you have a very close friend and that I know as well, but you are obviously closer. Tell us a little bit about her and your experience with the monarchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's funny, you know, I have the king behind me here.
Right.
If you can see Elvis.
Exactly.
But yeah, I haven't been much of a royals follower, but I have to admit, I like the drama when it comes to Harry and Meghan and all of that. Also because that kind of has crossed, like, you know, a political world,
right,
and a lot of the stuff that they've been saying. But Kinsey Schofield, who started, you know, in entertainment reporting in California and then was a news reporter in Phoenix, he has now been doing this really fun blog called To Die For Daily, so DI, as in Diana, and has been all over the place today, and I'm sure will be the next couple days. And it's just a really fun pop culture look at the royals. It's not, you know, meant to, you know, it's really annoying sometimes with, like, the conservative side, because they want to be like, we fought a war to, you know, get rid of this. It's like, no, it's about fun and fashion today. Not so much fun, but, you know, fashion and just following this, you know, institution. And Ben Domenech actually had a really funny tweet today. Funny, but also true. He said, let me just pull it up because I actually retweeted it and I generally don't tweet that much about the royals. But, you know, he said, this seems like another blow to an important institution undermined by boomer proclivities and likely to break into 1,000 pieces in the absence of old world values. Mm.
Well said.
And, you know, obviously, I assume referring to Prince Charles. I don't know when we call him King Charles, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of a mess. I assume whoever, you know, is in charge of that kind of thing. I mean, I think the U.S. version would be if the president, vice president and speaker died. It's like, well, then who is king after, or who is the president, say, after Charles, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, I have been fascinated with the royal family. I think since I was a kid, and in part because I have a lot of English heritage. Now, my English roots actually left England in 1650. Matthew Noble came over from England in 1650 and settled in Massachusetts. But there is, I think for Americans, there is this fascination with this monarchy, in part because America is a, you know, comes from England, and we did fight a war. Now, I don't think that had Queen Elizabeth been the queen at the time, that might have been the case. Who knows? I don't know. But the, you know, it's because in part we just don't, we don't get it, right? As far as monarchy.
Well, we shouldn't get it, right? I mean, I guess I'm a contrary opinion here. I'm one of those conservatives who think, like, this fascination with the monarchy. Though, I mean, as Lisa put it well, I mean, in terms of, you know, the fashion, the celebrity, all that, that's interesting, or at least it can be. But this extreme fascination that we have with the monarchy, I think can be problematic, this sort of romancing of it. And I think the queen and the way she's carried herself over these many, many years, and certainly the way she's had to deal with so many different structural issues and issues within the government that is the parliamentary government that is England and Great Britain. And it has been phenomenal if you've researched that. Unfortunately, her offspring are somewhat of a concern. And I think that's what Ben was getting at. Certainly that's what he was getting at, because they have grown up in this sort of privileged, wokey, bubble, and want to impose that upon, you know, only the rest of the country, but the rest of the world.
I mean, you think about it, she became queen when she was like 21?
Yeah,
very young.
I've been watching that miniseries a little bit,
The Crown,
and yeah. and they really do a nice job of certainly in that era of what that meant and how it was dealt with, and I found that really fascinating.
Yeah, and so there's been no, I mean, she has been in power as the queen for decades, so there's been no like, you know, Charles didn't feel the pressure, I guess, early in his life that, you know, she had to grow up quickly and has been in the reign for all these decades.
Well, there's a reason, you got to think, there's a reason why she's held on to the crown this long.
Yeah.
Right?
She didn't want to turn
Andrew and you've got Charles and God help us all.
I think that she really would have preferred to last long enough that this could have gone to William, that she outlasted Charles, but she gave him COVID. So she tried.
I think there's some truth to that, you know, not keeping up with the inner workings of the crown, but I think there's got to be some truth to that.
Lisa, what, you are what I consider an expert in the cross of pop culture and politics. You have said it many times. I've heard you say that. Is it politics is downstream from culture?
Yeah. Well, Andrew Breitbart said, you know, is kind of famous for saying it, and I'm sure it's been said, you know, many times before. I will point out that don't forget that Prince Andrew is one of her children, so Charles might be the most responsible one.
Yeah. That's a great point. That's
that kind of proves. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I and that's a sad commentary.
Well, and what's interesting is that
on the crown at this point.
I mean, Charles is old, so we are not going to have this kind of like. There are millions of,
and the queen will haunt him.
Yeah, I'm sure. There are millions.
I mean, there will be. You know.
There are millions of Britons who have only known the queen.
Yeah,
and now Charles will ascend to the throne. And my guess is that he's just not going to be there all that long, and then it's going to be William. And then William's going to be there for a while because he's pretty young, and Charles is very old.
Yeah.
And not in great health. So it'll be very interesting to watch.
And Harry and Meghan are just continue to live in Santa Barbara.
Yeah. What a weird, weird thing.
Well, you know what's interesting is this week, you know, on Monday, a new prime minister was
right. Yes,
was voted a woman. All the women have been conservatives.
That's right.
In the UK, and someone had pointed out it was the first time that there were, you know, no male leaders. So I think they must be counting like foreign minister and that sort of thing. All are female, but that didn't last very long. Patriarchy keeping us down.
God damn it!
We were so close.
They
were so close.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it is, the timing of this is just pretty remarkable when you think about this change in the prime minister with Liz Truss now taking, you know, being asked by the queen to form a government, Boris Johnson.
I mean, literally 2 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's not only a conservative, she's a libertarian, a self-described libertarian.
Yeah. No, she's,
which I'm hopeful for in terms of tax and regulatory policy. And
well, she said that Margaret Thatcher was one of her inspirations, and we can only hope that holds.
She's got a big hill to climb right now.
Yeah.
All the economic data coming out of England right now, and now this is just very dire.
Yeah.
And problematic.
So obviously covering the queen, in the pop culture era will now shift very dramatically because Charles is a very different person. He's also a male. But a lot more of attention will now go to Camilla, right?
He's also incredibly boring and staid.
Well, and that could probably be where William and Harry, you know, who have always been popular as far as coverage, you know, it'll be interesting to see what it does to the family because Harry and Meghan have sort of chosen this other path. Some might say Meghan has chosen it for him.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see what, you know, he decides to do or they decide to do, you know, because of this. The last I heard, she did not travel to England, but he did.
I think they announced that they were going together. Then it got amended that only Harry was going and maybe not even gotten there yet. I don't know. The timing of this is a little bit confusing, but
You have to
just speculating, but I would kind of assume that if it changed, it was most likely a request from the palace, right?
I would think so. I mean, they walked away from the family. And I think you're right, Lisa. I think that that was driven by Meghan. I got to believe that she is not a popular person in England.
No.
I mean, just from following Kinsey and, you know, To Die For Daily, y'all should have her on at some point. That would be really fun.
Yes, we should.
you know, I would, it sounds like that has been the case because, I mean, these two brothers have been through so much together that it seems unlikely that, you know, he would leave his family on his own. Not to imply like he doesn't have any sort of free will, but I mean, it's kind of clear from her background that she was looking to be a star in some respect. And as it turned out, being a princess didn't give you the kind of stardom in the way that she wanted. And so
no, it's actually a lot of responsibility
to come back here and sort of how you play the star in America now is you play the victim card, right. But it doesn't work necessarily if you are a, whatever title she is now that she's, you know, not princess. And so she was feeling it last week. You know, she compared herself to Nelson Mandela. And I'm actually kind of shocked I know this much, but,
I'm like, wait, what? Did I miss that?
Mandela family like spoke out, like they went to a performance of The Lion King, and someone from South Africa that was in the performance came and said, when you got married, we rejoiced in the streets, just like when Nelson Mandela was freed, because she is, you know, mixed race. And the Mandela family, you know, basically talked about Nelson Mandela's history and said, it's not the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She didn't sit in prison for a long time. Like,
She might feel that
she's just like no self-awareness. Like, she thought telling that story that someone supposedly told her this would somehow not seem wrong. But I mean, you should, even if someone legitimately told you that, you should have some self-awareness to not repeat it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that is. She's right up there with AOC, Sandy Cortez Lunacy. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah.
Just victim. Poor me.
Well, that's what I wrote about in Bright last week, because the two major stories last week about, you know, oppression and victimhood came from Meghan Markle and Lizzo. And it's like, here are two multi-million-dollar people. And it's not that there aren't victims and there's not racism and there's not oppression in the world, but these are not your best spokespeople.
Yes. That's a good point.
Meghan Markle lives in a mansion in California, has access to tens of millions of dollars, and she's just this poor little rich girl.
It might not be tens of millions anymore because the monarchy, you know, they've got to earn their own keep.
Hey,
now.
They've got a podcast on Spotify. I hear it's doing great.
Well, yeah,
maybe not as great as Lightbeard Dark Money.
Well,
but,
yeah. the weird thing is that Alyssa was asking me about this because it showed as the number one podcast, but it didn't show like the number of listeners, like a Joe Rogan or,
yeah,
you know.
But I wonder if it's among a group, you know what I mean?
It might be, yeah.
That,
or what's the genre or something.
Or maybe it's the...
But in solidarity with Lightbeard Dark Money, if she asked me to be on, I'm going to say no.
No, I think you should go on. I think you should definitely go on. You could probably teach her a few things.
Oh, my goodness.
It is classic. So, Lisa, talk to us a little bit about why you think the cultural issues matter in politics and where, you know, how that intersection works and, you know, what we can glean from it.
Sure. Yeah, tomorrow I actually have a column coming out on Human Events. It's an interview column, but then, you know, every once in a while I'll do like a recommendation or, you know, highlight something in pop culture that I think is doing a lot to advance freedom and to advance, you know, in some ways the conservative movement, but generally to advance freedom and free speech. And tomorrow's is with Chuck Dixon, who is the creator of the Batman villain Bane. He worked on the a writer for The Punisher, The Simpsons, SpongeBob, SquarePants.
I actually know this as a Batman fan. Dixon is, he created these, he created the next Robin, Tim Drake.
Yes.
I know this. See, I know this. This is how sad I am.
You probably know more than I do.
Yeah, Chuck Dixon is a legend.
Yeah, so that'll be out tomorrow. But back in 2016, and I know Sean remembers this, they adapted Peter Schweitzer's Totally Boring, which he says, book, Clinton Cash. They adapted Chuck along with Brett Smith and some other Marvel and DC collaborators and artists, adapted this boring white paper, 600-page white paper into a graphic novel. And it knocked The Killing Joke, which is the origin story of the Joker, I believe.
The greatest Batman.
The number one graphic New York novel Times, ever. Or the number one in graphic novels best set list. So basically they swapped, you know, a villain story for another villain story. And and Hillary lost. So this is an example of how pop culture warriors can make a difference and change something.
Right.
And also, particularly in that case, adapting a book that most people wouldn't read, and still maybe most people haven't read the graphic novel edition, but it's introducing it to, you know, a new audience, people that do read that, who would never maybe read a dry, 100% true and researched book. But, you know, when they look at the story of what happened in Haiti and with the Clinton Foundation, I mean, they can see these, you know, in color, you know, on paper. And also another thing that's dropping this week, is my son Hunter. You know, on my podcast, we just interviewed Robert Dobby, who, you know, most people know from The Goonies and Die Hard and all of that. And he produced and directed this movie. And what I love about it is it's, you know, based on all the dealings with, you know, Hunter Biden and the laptop and all that kind of stuff, but it is not a documentary. It is a feature film. It starts with exactly how you think a movie about Hunter Biden would start. Drugs, sex, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Off the ass of a hooker.
It's going to be so much more fun.
Can you say that on a family podcast?
Than a documentary.
I mean, it's just fact.
Oh, our republic. I weep.
Well, but I think that, you know, your point, so there, the Hunter Biden story has been completely squashed by the mainstream media. But if this, I mean, a film like this puts that right out into the middle of mainstream culture, that's going to, I mean, people, my hope would be that people see that and say, wait a minute, how is it that I didn't hear anything about this? Is a big deal. And it's because of the suppression of information to assist the man in the basement.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. That happened.
And it's, and I also like that, you know, for all of Biden's failings, you know, John James, who was in Dynasty, plays Biden, but it's not a caricature of Biden. You know, that is not what this is, the movie is about.
Right.
The trailer is really interesting. And, you know, it's made by someone from Hollywood, not a conservative who decided to be a filmmaker.
Right. Big difference. Mm-hmm. Very few successful.
Which tends to be our downfall. And Sean, when I worked for Sean, he was really good about that. And that's like, you don't take the conservative who happens to know how to do Photoshop. I mean, you use experts in their field.
Right.
And I don't really care if they happen to be conservative, as long as they want to do, you know, work for our side. I mean, there have been times when it's burned people, but I think generally there are people that are willing to work that, you know, if conservatives are willing to go outside their circle and find experts in their field and not just rely on whether or not someone, you know, is related to someone in the office or can do it for free, I think we could really, you know, move a lot more hearts and minds.
Yeah. Well, that's one. I mean, that is a great point. I think one of the challenges of conservatives injecting themselves in the pop culture is that they think that their ideas are so superior that they don't have to do it right. They just hear this. So they do. They, like you said, they cut corners. They try to do things for free. They try to get the deal. I mean, nature of conservatives, I guess, is that they want to you know, save money. But sometimes you really have to spend a lot of money to make a really impactful, you know, visual arts, a movie, a documentary, a book, whatever.
Yeah. So what is your take on, I think it's safe to say, readers and subscribers to the Daily Wire, what is your take on the things that they're trying to do? Ben Shapiro.
I think it's great. I like the first movie, you know, I saw because they streamed it on YouTube. And I've known Ben Shapiro since he was 13 years old.
Another person you brought to see.
I think he's still 13. He's just masquerading.
Okay, I've been in the conservative since the 1900s. But my only issue is I just wish that it was the product. And I think a lot of times they're looking at subscribing to a thing as the product, and the benefit is you get to watch this movie. But I would love to be able to say, oh, here's a hard copy of this movie, you should watch it, not here's where you can subscribe to the Daily Wire and watch this movie about, you know, the crazy regulations that actually do harm to schools as when it comes to something like a school shooting.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's to get more people on the platform, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to give people an alternative to what's coming out of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. The thing is they're putting out great products, but you're trying to get people to commit to something more than just the movie. And I think they need to work smaller. I mean, Ben is a lot smarter than me. And I'm sure there's, you know, a rhyme and reason to things like this, but I do think it would be great for more people to see the products that are being made.
Well, yeah, because the barrier of, I have to subscribe to watch this, I'm not going to do that. Whereas if we can just get them to watch it, get their mind thinking about, I hadn't really thought about it that way. I need to know more. I think sometimes we discount the importance of just planting the seed. Because the liberals have been doing that in Hollywood time in memoriam. Just planting little seeds. Very, very rarely do you watch a movie that just slaps you in the face. It's always the little pieces.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're describing also is what the Christian community has been trying to do for a long time in Hollywood, and that is create great content, but doing it in a way that it's not labeled as, this is blatantly Christian. This is just good family content, which creates an impression, which then plants a seed, but it's good content. It's well made. It's done well. It's not, diving into the woke culture or whatever, but it's not labeled as blatantly, this is a Christian movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like Left
Behind. But I think a lot of it, because it's sometimes donor driven.
Exactly.
They kind of want you to hit you over the head with the message rather than, like Sean said, plant a seed or have something less blatant.
A little nuanced, right? Mm-hmm. What was the one that I keep wanting to say Last Temptation of Christ, but that was the opposite.
Well,
there you go.
This is not, even in the children's area, this is not considered a quote-unquote Christian movie in the kids' sphere, but I would consider the movie Sing, which is an animated feature with Matthew McConaughey and a host of other stars. The values that are portrayed in that film, both Sing 1 and Sing 2, are absolutely biblical. Absolutely. And they do it in a way that's really, it's about perseverance. It's about being kind. It's about doing the right thing for the right reason. It's about, keep moving forward no matter what life throws at you and doing things the right way. There's all these great values for kids, and it's not all this other garbage that you see coming out of Hollywood.
And it's not a Disney.
And it's not Disney. I wasn't going to say that, but it's not all this Disney craziness going on.
Disney Plus is
right now.
Constant stream in our house. Obviously, I have my 3-year-old, Reagan, is a princess, and so she watches all the princesses. Although she's been, lately, she's, what was the one? I mean, she goes through we watch Coco over and over and over again. And then it was Encanto.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over, it makes me realize I need to learn Spanish.
Let's not talk about Bruno.
but those are, a little tangent, but there are things that we can do in the conservative movement that would actually help if we played more of the long game. I feel like sometimes we do these projects, you know, and it's like, what can I accomplish right now? Mm-hmm. And we're not thinking the long term.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to give it away. I know Sean has read it, but there is something coming next year. But I think that's especially with children's content. I mean, what you just mentioned is like base level, girls are interested in princesses, but instead we're like, you know, and no offense, because it's a lot of, if, you know, if I have a friend that is connected to this, but the answer to girls like Disney princesses is not, here's a biography of, you know, Amy Coney Barrett.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And that's what we're putting out.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that, I don't know. I mean, obviously if I knew the answer, I would be pursuing it, but I think that's why we have these discussions, right? So we can get people to think about what is it that I can be a part of? And so, you know.
And it can be all of it. It doesn't have to be like no biographies and only this. It could be everything, but we got to participate in, you know, all fronts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an all of the above, just like the energy strategy, right?
Well, we have to engage. We can't hide
in
the culture and not be afraid to point out.
Well, we can't stand on the sidelines and just yell evil, evil, evil. I mean, we have to give people something to consume.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to consume.
And that's where how we got here is, you know, Chuck talked, one of the questions that I ask, you know, all of the pop culture warriors is, what do you say to readers who have opted out of the pop culture war? And, you know, most of them obviously have not opted out. And they say, if you walk away from a war, you've lost, and you've created this vacuum to be filled by more woke content.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we've got, you know, we've got some folks who, and I don't want to say that they're blatantly Republican or blatantly conservative, but they're people who have the same values to some degree, which are still out in the space. I mean, Adam Sandler, Rob Schneider, who's now a Phoenix resident.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
And, you know, a number of others that I'm blanking on right now because there aren't a lot. But there are folks out there who have not been completely captured by the leftist ideology and the wokeness and those things. And so it's important for them to...
It's funny that you bring up Rob Schneider because, you know... Dana Carvey and David Spade started their own podcast, you know, reminiscing about the days of when SNL was funny, basically. And they're having all their old friends on, like Rob. They did a two-part episode on Rob, and it was, I learned so much about him and his life and his family and everything else. And you're right. I mean, they're sort of saying, okay, we can be funny and we can make fun of everybody because that's what we do. That's the purpose of comedy. And we've lost that over the last several years. I think it was Rob Schneider who actually said that when SNL died is when Hillary Clinton lost the election and what's her name? I can't remember the one who was imitating her on the show, came out and sang Hallelujah, like a requiem and didn't make it funny.
Yeah.
Didn't make fun of Hillary. And then he knew it's done.
Yep.
They've jumped the shark. It's over. It'll never be the same.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been.
No.
And it's sad.
It is.
Well, it's interesting that so much, you know, particularly on free speech and probably, I wouldn't say the conservative, but like, you know, anti-woke and pro-free speech, it's come from comedians. It's come from people like Rogan and Dave Chappelle and Rob Schneider and Sandler and Adam Alan Covert, who is the co-producer with Adam Sandler, Norm MacDonald, R.I.P.
Yeah, God bless Norm MacDonald. For some reason, I've been watching these clips of him as Burt Reynolds on Instagram.
I love Burt Reynolds.
Oh, my goodness.
But you're right. The comics have been the leaders because they realize that their craft is dead if this woke ideology takes hold and wins. because mm-hmm. there will be no comedy. Because if you can't yep. poke fun at the authority and the craziness of society, then
well,
no
I
comedy.
Mean, going back to the whole idea of Saturday Night Live, I mean, if there was a time, they made fun of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Dana Carvey, why is Dana Carvey famous? Well, it's because of his impression of George H.W. Bush,
right?
Which he completely or made his lady. Own.
What? Or the church lady.
Or the church lady, making fun of, you know, super ultra conservative
yeah.
Christians.
Yeah.
Which, but it's okay. You can laugh at it. Right. As long as it's balanced, everybody is okay with that. The problem, I have no problem with Alec Baldwin making fun of Donald Trump. What I do have a problem with is nobody really making fun of Joe Biden.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And Joe Biden
but
is a gaffe
there any
a minute.
Material there?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, how exciting
you know,
could
you know
it be
maybe just... maybe enshrine him in black and red with Marines in the background, and then and then have Pink Floyd's "The Wall" playing in the background. That would be great because that's imagery I thought of when I first saw it.
Yeah,
that was I was like, crazy. Has anybody called Roger Waters to let him know that they stole his stage?
Well, Lisa, what as we wrap this up, what words of wisdom do you have for our listeners about culture and politics and maybe just life in general?
Well, because I have it all figured out. I think, you know, what Chuck and what others recently had Dean Cain, Robert Davi, they all basically say the same thing. And that is that you shouldn't opt out. I mean, certainly if you want to make decisions like I don't want to subscribe to this thing or I don't want to watch this thing. But at the very least, opt in to the things that do interest you, because at the end of the day, a lot of these people just read the bottom line. Top Gun Maverick, that is sending a message to people. Yeah. The fact that it was the biggest movie of the summer and for decades and for Tom Cruise's career. And there's, you know, lots of other examples like of that, of like watching The Terminal List instead of, you know, some other woke show instead.
Right.
You know, make a decision based on that. And then also stay informed, because you're not necessarily doing yourself any favors if someone who's maybe, you know, on the fence about politics or about, you know, some big issue, and they come to you and say, well, what do you think about this? And you're just like, oh, I don't watch TV.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't seem very relatable.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we will definitely have to have you back on.
Yeah. Thank you for what you're doing, because there's not absolutely. That many people in the conservative space who are actually engaged in this in the way that you are. So thank you for that.
It makes me honored to be able to call you a friend. So. We appreciate
it. And, you know, I'll make a small announcement. I, as of Monday, will be putting my bright behind but basically putting my money where my mouth is, and that is switching over to Substack to a pro free speech platform. So people will be able to subscribe for the daily email for free.
Awesome.
On Substack at getbright.substack.com.
Oh, great.
Excellent.
That's fantastic.
That's a great daily email that Lisa's been editing for many years, right on top of pop culture and politics. Yeah. So keep it up. We appreciate it, Lisa. Thanks for being
Thank
here.
You.
Yeah, God bless.
And, thanks, everybody.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Have a good one.